T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
But for those people who are, you know, champing, by the way, which is...
No, what? Chomping.
It's chomping.
It's champing.
It's chomping.
Sports Talk Saturday.
The other day when I said chomping on the bit of Twitter, I got 20 people. It's champing.
It's the internet. You know you can't trust
it's
that.
It's champing.
On WGR.
Champing.
Sports Radio 550.
Hour two. Sports Talk Saturday, every day. You know, it's one thing to know that you have to watch what you say because the Federal Communications Commission is always on your behind. But now I've literally got to watch what I say so that it doesn't get turned into a new open the very next hour.
I think Derek would do very well for himself working for the Federal
he might.
Communications Commission.
He might. The FCC won't let him be, or let me be me.
Right.
It's a little M&M for you. Nick Geary, Joe DiBiase, you heard Derek Kramer on the update there. We are waiting patiently, and we are now good for gold here on the West Her Hotline as Brian Koziel joins us. Brian, good afternoon now. It's, you know, what are you doing? Are you watching the, you know, the on the green or on the practice green for the Masters right now like we are in here?
Yeah, I've just pulled it up here, actually. Just kind of got back from our TD Green show this morning from East Aurora, and we're up and going. And I mean, the TV's, what is it? The actual TV coverage starts at 2, which is perfect because Tiger tees off at 2:05. We'll be off and running, and be a good day for TV viewing.
It will absolutely be like a perfect Saturday for TV viewing. One of the things that that Joe and I kind of started talking about, actually more so what I was thinking about coming in, is how the top of the leaderboard this year at this Masters potentially affects the style of play in the weekend. I think a lot of people, if you don't have such a star-studded top 15 players going into the weekend, I think maybe the style of play is a little bit more aggressive. But I wonder, with all of the star power, the driving ability. I mean, you look at some of these guys like DJ and some of the best putters in the in all of golf with Jason Day and DJ. Like, that's got to affect the way these guys are going in game plan wise, right? Because they know if they make a mistake, they've got, you know, 7 of the top 15 players in the world right there behind them.
Yeah, it's jam packed, and there are so many quality players here within reaching distance, and that's what we were debating this morning on TD Green, like. The guys that are down at 3 and 4 under, and there's a lot of big names there too, are they thinking, hey, I'm only 3 shots back, I'm only 4 shots back, I'm fine, there's still half the tournament to go? Or are they thinking, yeah, I'm 3 shots back, I'm 4 shots back, but there's 15 quality guys, 10 of them which are ranked in the top 20 in the world, all in front of me, I got to play super aggressive today and maybe change up whatever my initial game plan was. So, you know, mostly on a Saturday, you got to figure they're going to stick to whatever they think that they have to do coming in, like what was their plan. And then maybe, you know, for a guy, like we were saying, a guy like Fowler, who so likable, so many are pulling for him to get his first major. I would love for him to see him get it at the Masters. He's coming in today at 3 under. And yes, he's only 4 back. It doesn't seem like a huge margin, but there's just so many guys in between. Can you run down some of these guys that are at 7 under over the next 2 days? Of course.
Yeah.
But there's also 17 other guys in front of Fowler that he's going to have to run down to on the way in order to get the job done.
Brian Koziel here on the West Her Hotline. Brian, one of the things, too, when you look through some of the sports books, I think Joe found one sports book in particular that has Tiger with the best odds to win, right? 6-1?
Yep, 6-1, tied with Dustin Johnson.
6-1 odds for Tiger to win. I'm looking at the favorites, Brian, and the name Brooks Koepka kind of keeps popping up in my head as a guy who's what? Already has won 3 majors, is young, can hit the ball, can really play. Brooks Koepka, to me, is my favorite. Who do you think at this point is your favorite going into the weekend?
I think if I was going to pick one, I would go with you on Koepka. He just, to me, he doesn't seem like he's affected at all by pressure moments. He can overpower holes with his length off the tee, and his short game and putting is underrated. I mean, he's proven that in these other events. And we should have probably been giving him more thoughts and more talk and more buzz coming into this event. The last six majors he's played in, he's won three of the six.
That's pretty crazy.
That alone right there, you'd say, well, he's the hottest player in the world. Well, everyone's saying, well, Rory's coming in playing the best. And, you know, that record of three majors in his last six events, he didn't play in the Masters last year because he was hurt. So that's kind of how that stat falls into place. But I think part of the reason is that, yes, his physical tools are extremely enticing to watch with what he can do to overpower a golf ball. But he's not the sexiest of quote. He's kind of boring sometimes in terms of what he says. And he only has one other career win beyond those majors. Now, I'm not at all downplaying his career successes. It's tremendous at this age. But I think that's why people kind of never or why we're not continuing to kind of lump him in when we go into a major and say, oh, Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, that sort of crew, Justin Rose. Koepka sometimes gets forgotten because during the regular tour season, he just hasn't had that kind of career that all these other guys have had.
And I wonder, too, when you talk about some of these top guys like the Koepkas, and maybe the most impressive thing with Koepka has just been his consistency. And the other guy that has stood out to me, Brian, and you, I think you sent this to me yesterday, and it was kind of an unbelievable stat to me because Tiger's right up there. But in the last 10 rounds of a major, you're looking at a guy like Francisco Molinari at 25 under in his last 10 rounds in a major, and Tiger's right there tied with him, which I think is maybe even more impressive considering, and this is something, Brian, that the announcers yesterday kind of kept alluding to with Tiger, is that last year the difference of Tiger in the Masters in 2018 and 2019 is so vast because of the, you know, if you think about 2018, Tiger's just kind of still figuring it out. Can he take a full swing? How does his back react to certain shots? This year you can see the confidence, but I think the same with a guy like Francisco Molinari, who has just been a bearer of consistency for the last, 24 months pretty much?
Yeah, he's been excellent. And the PGA Tour season, he has been excellent the last year, and then you throw in what he's accomplished on the European Tour with many victories there, and he's had one of the best two-year stretches in quite a while. That stat that you mentioned, I think that's an impressive stat. The last 10 rounds of major championship golf, so that would include the two that we've had this week from the Masters, last year's PGA Championship in August, that four, and then the four from the British Open. So you take the last 10 rounds, Tiger has the best score in terms of its comparison to par. He's 25 under. You also mentioned Molinari, 25 under. Adam Scott, 22 under, and then Koepka, 21. And to go back on Tiger, think about these last three majors. Not only, as you said, last year at the Masters this is his first major back after having sat out for so long. Every swing, if he doesn't complete the swing properly, are we sitting here wondering, did he injure himself? You know, every time he sprayed one to the right or he sprayed one to the left off the tee, you're like, is it his back? Is he just rusty? You know, all those thoughts coming into play. Those are all gone. He was winning at the British Open, heading to the back nine. He was going toe-to-toe with Koepka down the stretch at that PGA Championship. And now here, you know, day one, he was tied for the lead at one point. Yesterday, he closes within a shot. And I heard you earlier when you started your show, and, you're right on in this. God, if he can get those 10-foot and under putts to go, I mean, he had three of them on the front nine of his opening round. Yesterday, that shot into 12 on the par three. He comes out after the weather delay, it lips out.
Mm-hmm.
17 and 18, incredible approaches in as he's finishing his round. Both of those makeable birdie putts. Even if he's making, a couple of these out of these six that I'm just mentioning here right now, even if he just makes two of the six, he's got the solo lead right now, and we might even be having an even different conversation.
I wonder, too, to that point, Brian, with how difficult at times the pin placement was yesterday. We were talking a little bit about some of the pin placements I was looking up online today. Is the margin for error on some of these greens that are huge. Like, there are some monster greens at Augusta, and the pin placements putting between where you basically have 10 to 15 feet of room between the back of the green, which then falls off, or the front of the green, which has either got sand or water. It's just, it's sort of unbelievable when you think about the difficulty of some of these shots. And yet, when Tiger has been on, it's been these long birdie putts, but everything close, and he is, you know, ranked like 120th or 130th in the world in putts under 10 feet. Like, is that your, if Tiger wins, it's going to be because blank, that you think maybe it's he's starting to hit these within 10 footers? Like, all he needs to do to be a stroke, or, you know, one shot lead today, is hit two of those within 7 feet, and we're talking about a guy who's got the sole possession of the lead going into Saturday.
I think that's really all of the facets of his game right now, I think, are looking really good. He's never been, even during his heyday in the early 2000s, he was never super accurate off the tee.
Right.
But in terms of his driving right now, since he's come back, he's driving it as accurately as he ever has in his career. His approach shots were tremendous. And you mentioned the pin placement. There's one thing that Jeff Mita said this morning on our show I thought was a great thing. He's like, the thing about Augusta is that you have to know where to hit on the green in terms of where do you want to have the best putt so that you don't three putt. Because he said some of these pin placements, you could just be, you know, you could hit the shot just 5 feet deep of your target,
yeah.
Which normally for you and I playing on, you know,
that's a great
courses,
shot for us. Yeah,
that's a great shot. But he goes, if you're five feet deep of the pin, on certain some of these holes, he's like, you're in jail and you're going to never get up and down. He goes, or if you're 5 feet short, that could be, he's like, it's knowing where to miss. Koepka said that yesterday after his round, when they said it was a little more of an up and down round for him. And he just said, I'm playing for my misses. And I think what he meant by that was, is knowing, okay, if I don't hit this shot pure, it's going to go here. And knowing that that here, the trouble there, is a safe spot, a safer spot to miss. And I think that's why you see Woods, you see Mickelson. I mean, we've seen Freddie Couples compete
right
here in the past heading into the weekend. I think it doesn't necessarily have to be a young, overpowering thing. Of course, does it help to hit a 350 off the tee? Of course. But I think that's why this tournament is better for that it allows guys with more experience, guys that have that ability to know, okay, where can I not miss it? You know, because you're never going to play a perfect round. Even these professionals, they miss shots. But it's knowing where to miss and where not to miss. And Tiger seems to be able to be in a better spot right now. Even when he has missed, he's gotten up and down quite a bit. His short game, I think, right now is spot on. And I think that's going to give him a chance because he isn't going to play perfect. But can you, when you do have an errant shot, are you able to recover from it? And he so far has been able to do that.
Brian, we mentioned Molinari a little bit earlier, and I was just looking through his major history. First 32 majors of his career, he had 2 top 10 finishes.
It's unbelievable.
The last 5 majors, not even including the Masters where
today,
he's tied for first right now, last 5 majors, he's got 3 top 10 finishes, tied for second at the PGA in 2017. He won the Open last year, tied for 6th at the PGA last year. Like, I'm trying to think of another guy
that had this resurgence.
Right. Like, well, not even resurgence, just like where the light bulb just like came on like in his late 30s, and before that was just kind of a guy.
Yeah. Here's what I think is super cool, and I haven't been able to confirm this or not. I've been trying to search articles and search websites and everything. He actually was a caddy for a previous Masters tournament. His brother, Eduardo Molinari, also a professional golfer. Well, early 2000s, Eduardo does enough on the European Tour to qualify to play in the Masters. His caddy was Francesco Molinari.
Kidding.
So he caddied at the Masters, and I've been trying to, that's been one of the things I've been trying to look. Has a person that's ever caddied in the Masters ever won the Masters? You might have that storyline playing out tomorrow.
That's pretty remarkable. I feel like I've maybe heard that story before.
Either
way, I just, with or without that kind of crazy storyline, it just, you don't necessarily see, it's almost like the opposite of David Duval, right? It's like where you're so great and you're this major champion and all of a sudden you just fall off a cliff. Like, that's a more realistic story than seeing a guy who, really, to put it, what Joe said, he was just kind of another guy on tour. And then all of a sudden, like this switch in, and it's kind of a weird time considering how competitive the field is now. It would have made more sense, you know, 7-8 years ago for him to make this resurgence. It's just, it's kind of a weird story. And the other guy too, before I let you go, Brian, is Louis Oosthuizen, who just seems like in every major brings his A game. Yesterday, I mean, some of the shots with his irons that he was hitting, he is one of those guys that maybe also doesn't get talked about enough. He has one of the prettiest golf swings in all of the game. He's kind of an interesting dark horse in this whole thing because of how effective he is with his irons.
Yeah, he's a great iron player. You're right. He seems to step up in major play. Oosthuizen kind of plays half PGA Tour, half European Tour, as South African, so we don't maybe see him as often. But he definitely has the skill. Probably for me, the most memorable with him in the majors was when him and Jordan Spieth were going at it at the U.S. Open 2 years ago, and that was at Chambers Bay. And it looked like maybe that he was going to win, and then Dustin Johnson, of course, came in there at the end, but Oosthuizen was in it up until like the second last hole. He's a guy that definitely performs well in majors.
It's that Jordan Spieth guy you were talking about. Who's that?
Yeah, I know.
Who's that?
Well, yesterday, it was interesting to see him play well, and he's off to a good start today. Spieth is. He's moved himself up to 23rd. He just birdied his first hole. I'm sitting here just looking right now. Spieth was like +4 at one point. I don't know if he got to +5.
Shot a 75 on Thursday, yeah, I think.
Right.
Yeah, 75.
He had a terrible first round, but yesterday comes back seven shots better, shoots a 68, and then today, you know, he's at -2. And look, a minute ago, we're talking about Fowler and Justin Thomas at DeChambeau at -3. Well, Spieth at -2. So he's had a very, very, very poor 16-month stretch here in the PGA Tour, you know, the start of this year and last year. And the only thought is, well, he's back in a comfort spot where he's always played well. The worst Spieth has ever finished in the Masters is 11th. So I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if he plays well this weekend and gets himself inside that 11 number. I think he's still too far back. It's not even the number of shots, as we were talking about before. To make up 5 shots on the leader over 2 rounds, which is what he's going to have to do, isn't impossible, but it's the number of golfers. I feel like here, I'll equate it to my Sabres argument when somebody said, oh, they're only 7 points out, you know, with a month ago. I'm like, yes, but...
And they got to pass every team in the Eastern Conference.
You don't have to just catch the 8th place team. You got to catch the 9th, the 10th, and the 11th place team, too. Like, that's always, you know, if we can convert that to today, there's so many big names, 2-under, 3-under, 4-under. Like, that's the task for them. It's not the number of strokes. It's the number of golfers.
That actually perfectly leads me into the question I wanted to ask you. Like, of those big names a little bit further down, if I pinned you down and made you take one, like Spieth at 2-under, Justin Thomas
Rory's,
at 3-under.
You know, right there.
Rory's at even. I don't even know if that's really realistic. But yeah, Rory if you want it. Fowler at 3, Mickelson at 4. Yeah. Like, which one of those big names further down is most likely to, like, make a run, you think?
For me, rooting interest in that group, it's Fowler and Mickelson. Yeah. I think they would make great stories. My best answer is Justin Thomas. I feel like he's the guy that's capable of throwing up a 65 at any moment.
Mm, yeah.
All right, Brian. Thanks, man. Appreciate you. We will hear you next Saturday for Tee to Green following the Masters.
Oh, actually, Brian, before you go, I just wanted to get this in. So you actually texted me after we talked about this in the first hour. So the Zach Johnson thing yesterday.
Yes.
So that's not a new rule, that it's not a stroke against him, correct?
Yes. So let's just go through this.
I'm glad that
like
you said
yesterday.
This, Joe.
Yeah. So you guys mentioned it. I tweeted out the video this morning. If anybody hasn't seen it, it's all over. You can just search it if you haven't seen it. But so Zach Johnson's addressing, he tees up the ball. He's kind of taking practice swings, and it goes off the tee marker. We all know how that played out. So that is not a penalty because it's an unintentional swing. But that doesn't have anything to do with the new rule. That actually was always a rule. So everybody listening has played with that guy, right? You
tee
up the ball. You accidentally knock it when you you put your driver down, you accidentally knock the ball, and of course that guy says, one, right? You've always played with a guy like that. Don't be that guy. Right? Like,
I know that guy.
One.
Yeah. I know that guy. One. Yep, I know
it.
Yep.
It's not one. It never was one. If you don't – the reason why that it's not one and the reason why Zach Johnson's shot yesterday didn't count was because the ball is not put in play. That's why. It's been teed up. You have not addressed the ball as if you're making an intentional swing. So he was practice swinging. He obviously caught the ball regardless of where it went. He declared to his playing partners, hey, that was unintentional. And he even was asking Kuchar and Poulter there, who were trying not to laugh, said, yeah, that, you know, that doesn't count as a penalty. Now, the new rule, and probably some of you listening have done this, maybe even all of us have, when you're practicing your putting stroke on the green, if you accidentally touch your ball or knock your ball with the end of your putter, that now used to be a penalty. It is not anymore. You can replace it and put the ball back to where you were supposed to be putting from. That's what the new rule is there. Now, if you do it in the fairway, like on your approach shot or on a chip, when the ball is in play, that is still a penalty. So kind of three scenarios. The tee shot, the ball has never been put in play. If you accidentally hit it or knock it off the tee, that has always never been a stroke. So maybe some people right now have to go back and switch.
Yeah, I got to change my scorecard.
Money, right?
Yeah, I got to change my scorecard from last week.
On the green now is new. If you accidentally hit it, you can replace it. But in the fairway, in the rough, around the green, if you accidentally hit it when it's in play like that, that's a one-stroke penalty, and you have to put the ball back to where you were supposed to be hitting from.
I believe this with everything in my being, Brian, that although it definitely was unintentional, that he took a stab at that. Like, that was a swing. And I just think it was a total brain fart. Just the way that you saw him, quote-unquote, address the ball. He was not address the ball. Like, the ball was half a ball length away from his club. Yet, it looks like he was absolutely taking a stab at that. I think he had an absolute brain fart. I believe it with everything inside me.
There's no way.
I think it was what he said it was. I think it was unintentional. But I will agree with you. He did swing pretty hard for a practice.
That was an awfully hard swing. That's all I'm saying. Like, he was lined up. Like, when I take practice swings, my feet are together. Like, I'm doing, like, a little, back and forth.
Everybody
thing.
Has their
I
own
know,
thing, though.
I know. And you know what? I think this what it comes down to is someone needs to watch some film of all of his practice
Zach
swings.
Johnson
I need
practice
to know.
Swings.
I need to know what his practice swing looks like to know for sure. But I believe in my soul that it was absolutely unintentional. But I think he was going after.
There's
it.
Nothing to be gained from that, though. It
I know,
doesn't make any sense.
I know. I think it's a total brain fart on his side. Yeah. I just really think he dropped, bad pun here, but I think he dropped the ball.
I'm looking forward to your all 22 Zach Johnson breakdown.
Sounds good, Brian. Thanks, man. I appreciate it, and we'll talk soon, my friend.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
All right, Brian Koziel there on the West Hur Hotline. Got to go because Pat Malocaro joining us next. Help us preview some Bisons baseball here on Sports Talk Saturday on WGR.
Runners get their leads from first and second. The 2-1 swung on, drilled high in the air and deep to left. Way back, gone! A big league home run, no doubt, off the bat of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And it is now an 8-4 ball game.
That voice you hear was actually Todd Callen, not Pat Malocaro. But Pat will be joining us here in a few moments. He's up at Salins Field doing some interviews currently. So
sounded like Pat to me.
That was Todd Callen.
Sounded like Pat.
No.
Pretty close.
No. Come on. Apparently you don't know Todd Callen.
I know Todd Callen.
Yeah.
Or you don't know Pat.
Are we calling Guerrero Vladdy G?
I don't believe we're doing that.
I think that's a
should
good
we?
Thing.
Are we doing
I'd
that?
Say we should be. Yes.
By the way, before because I do want to ask this to Pat, I was thinking about getting a WGR crew together for the Tim Tebow game, which I believe
I will be going to one of those.
Anyway. I will absolutely be going to a Tim Tebow game. I just want to. They play at home against Syracuse not until the end of next month.
Yeah,
which kind
end of
stinks.
May. So you it's know, during the week, I think too.
It is. It's a the first one. It's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday series.
Tebow's gonna be with the Mets by then.
Dude, don't even get me going.
I mean, maybe.
Don't even get me going. Don't even
it's possible,
get me going.
Right? Isn't it possible?
It's technically possible.
Don't shake your head, Derek. It's the Mets. They'll do it.
Is he doing so he's to be honest with you, the fact that he's in AAA is actually pretty remarkable. Is it a PR?
It's remarkable
triple,
given what,
is it a triple A, and maybe this is a good question for Pat. I don't know how much Pat's watched of Syracuse, but is Tim Tebow a PR AAA player or is he a AAA player?
He's gotta be. He's like the bizarro Bo Jackson. He's just bad at two sports. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Wasn't he hitting like 200 in Double A? He's got to be with the Triple A just for PR, I think. They're trying to make it look like development, but I don't know enough about his actual development to say that it is a PR stunt. But
isn't
it
crazy that
Tim
Tebow lives in Syracuse?
Yeah, a little bit.
Right?
For now. I mean,
he said he loves Wegmans, by the way. Tim Tebow.
I mean, that's not a very hot take, I would say, but
no.
It's probably. Wegmans is Wegmans doesn't go down to Florida, where he's from.
So right now,
Here's the thing though. Like,
Tim Tebow is
do?
Batting 120.
Yeah. 120. It's pretty bad.
He has 2 hits and 10 strikeouts so far this year. Well, I'm sorry, he has 3 hits, 10 strikeouts.
I mean,
2 runs, 4 RBIs.
I guess he wouldn't be the biggest embarrassment in the major leagues, considering he's a guy that's like 0 for 60 at this point. But
dude,
he'd probably be close. He could set the record.
So, by the way, I want to point out that in Double A, he batted 273,
which is not great, right?
He had 6 home runs, 36 RBIs, 22 walks.
22 walks, okay.
103 strikeouts. So it hasn't been great for Tebow, but it also hasn't been off the rails. Triple A is a different level, though. Triple A, people don't really give enough credit to the level of difficulty of Triple A, but Triple A is basically, I mean, those are the best of the young players, and then a bunch of players that are, you know,
halfway decent.
Yeah. Older guys. By the way, you have the remote, right?
I do have the remote.
A quick switch to channel 2.
Okay. We got some Premier League action going on.
I would say more importantly. No.
It is Premier League.
No.
Premier League. Why? What's going on? NHL playoffs will start later.
NBC Sports Network.
Is there NHL playoffs on already?
No. I believe not until this evening.
NBA playoffs start in the afternoon today.
2:30.
Your Nets against the Sixers.
College football.
That's right, baby. Notre Dame spring game. I don't think I could.
No,
I have the remote.
You do have it.
I don't think I can stick with a scrimmage.
I think, first of all, I think you need to. I think it's.
I don't like watching Notre Dame play other teams.
This is
a
big year for Notre Dame football.
Oh, is it? Isn't every year a big year for Notre Dame football?
They were in the Big 4 last year.
Yeah, and they got smoked.
So did Alabama. So
true. Okay, that's true.
You know,
can't argue with you there.
I
didn't see. No one saw that coming, though. A lot of people, I think, saw Notre Dame getting smoked.
I didn't. It was on my birthday.
That's because you were
really
a fan.
Excited. I do like the fact, and I think this is a very important detail here, that Ian Book has put the visor on, the clear visor. That to me could be the difference of Ian Book in year 2 of as the starter is that visor. It's.
Oh my God.
I can't tell you. I can't really emphasize enough the level of swag that you get when you go. First of all, everyone in the really since the combine has been talking about Miles Boykin, the wide receiver for Notre Dame that is draft eligible. Well, he decided to enter the draft this year, which I was kind of disappointed about because Chase Claypool, who you're seeing here, very good Canadian. He's going to be a senior this year. He'll be in the Senior Bowl next year as a player that probably is going to. He's going to be drafted within the first, I would say probably within day 2. He's a pretty good player. If they had Boykins and Chase Claypool back, Notre Dame would have quite an offense. But, you know, what are you going to do? 803-0551, 888-552-550, your numbers to call. Obviously, the big news is Notre Dame's on. Not really. I do kind of want to talk about some NBA playoffs, though, because the NBA is something that you and I actually
both very into.
We are both into it, which it's kind of
hard.
And
we just randomly, I think, support the same team.
Yeah, I think it's just based out of common sense. Like, you kind of there are teams.
What is your origins? Because we're Denver Nuggets, by the way, is the team that we both kind of follow. Like,
what's
your origins?
My first favorite team was the Denver Nuggets.
Same.
Because of Carmelo.
Same. Like, I liked Melo at Syracuse,
yes.
And then I followed him to the
Nuggets. And then I followed him to the Knicks.
No, see, I didn't do that, though.
I did that.
I didn't like how he left, so I stuck with the team rather than with the player.
That's fair. The reason I went to the Knicks is I was like, wow, this is great. We're talking proximity now. Not only is my favorite player changing teams from a Denver Nuggets team I really loved, because not only did they have my favorite player, but their jerseys were just awesome. The powder blues, the yellow with the old Denver Nugget with the rainbow thing going on.
Speaking of swag, they had swag.
Yeah.
They had Iverson.
Iverson, J.R. Smith in his prime. They had Tyson Chandler. They had who else was the big dude from UMass, Marcus Camby, Kmart in his prime. Like, yeah, they had some players on that Denver Nuggets team. Now, this is the first time in five or six years that he's going to be. Wow, he only had 19 touchdowns last year. I guess he only played half the season. Ian Book, by the way.
I can't stand this game. I can't do it. This is getting turned off pretty quick.
Let's talk, though, quickly about some of the series that you really like.
Okay.
I kind of mentioned
there's
already
a few.
I do like that 76ers Nets series. I think it could be more interesting than maybe people. You know what series I'm just absolutely not looking forward to watching at all?
Magic and Raptors.
That's a close one.
That's the one for me.
Is Pacers Celtics that I don't want to watch. With no Victor Oladipo, I don't care at all about the Pacers.
I think they might pull off an upset there.
I think
they could pull off an upset there.
I hope so, just because Kyrie's on his way to New York anyway, so who cares?
I mean, it would make the second round a lot less interesting in the East. The one thing, so like the East over the last 5-6 years has just been LeBron. Like,
yeah.
We all knew it was going to happen. Even last year when there was some doubt, in the back of your mind, you're like, he'll find a way to get back. And he did. The Raptors were like the best team in the league, and they got swept by LeBron. And this year, it's like you're setting yourself up for something that the NBA doesn't often have, which is
non-LeBron.
The question marks. Like, you don't really know who's going to win in the East. Like, you could have realistically, one of four teams could make the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
And that is generally not the case in the NBA. And I think it's kind of a preview of what we might see next year.
You know what I'll be interested
to see? Some player movement kind of influences that.
I think you're right. And you know what's interesting, though, is I wonder if the NBA playoffs turn into what the NHL playoffs have been early on, which is a bunch of teams that are closer than we kind of thought. Are like, you have some of these games where a lot of the quote-unquote favorites, Winnipeg, San Jose in the West.
Tampa.
Right. I mean,
best team on paper, I think, in 20 years.
In 20 years. And they are getting absolutely throttled by Columbus, who I think most of us were at this point just making fun of, because we're like, okay, they've got no – they've traded their – everything you could trade away, they basically traded away for good players that aren't going to be there next
year.
But
see, I respected the hell out of that.
You know what? I did too, but I always thought they were doing it just so they could lose in the first round. Again, that's what I thought they were doing.
I thought they were just – to me, at the time, remember, they didn't really know where they were going to be slotted. So it's kind of unlucky that they got Tampa. At the time, on the Blue Jackets, they were going to lose their best players, so they had one of two options. They could have traded their best players for futures, or they could have just said, you know what, screw it. We're going all in right now. Let's go trade for Matt Duchene. Let's go trade for Dzingel. Let's go get some UFAs, and let's go all in right now. And yeah, you got Tampa in round one, but it might end up working out for them. Anyways,
I like Torts, by the way.
Like, Are you saying you think that it's going to turn into that this year, or that it might turn into that in the future?
I think it's going to turn into that this year. Without LeBron, I think it's totally wide open. It's a weird, wide open field this year without LeBron.
I don't know, man. I still don't think that sport is there with that.
What are you thinking? What are you thinking about Milwaukee, though?
I think they're a -5,000 favorite to win that series.
I'm not talking about the series. I'm talking about if you had to pick the teams right now,
I thought you meant just the first round.
No.
Early on, like, I still think you are in a spot where you have maybe three series where there's an actual question who's going to win. Maybe three. Utah, Houston, OKC, Portland, and maybe Boston, Indiana, or Philly, Brooklyn. I think
Portland could have gone a long way with Nurkic healthy. They don't have a big now.
They have him last year and got swept.
Yeah, but he didn't have the season that he had last year that he did this year. He was the difference for them this year. I mean, Dame Lillard is maybe one of the more underrated point guards in all of basketball. The thing that I look at is the Bucks are maybe the most interesting, because I think they're right with.
I mean, Giannis is like the new LeBron. Like, he's the best player in the conference. And he's kind of a similar style of player. He doesn't really, he's not as good a shooter.
But I think like the Nuggets, the Bucks are like one of those teams that have 12 players on their bench that they can really kind of play anybody. Not only that, but Brook Lopez, his resurgence, basically him learning how to shoot a three-pointer, not only learning, but being an elite three-point shooter,
has
totally changed the outlook of that team, because now, instead of it being, you know, Antetokounmpo basically not being able to shoot threes, drive the lane, and only be able to kick out to Chris Middleton or Malcolm Brogdon, now all of a sudden they've surrounded Antetokounmpo with four shooters that allow him to free range, drive the lane, and just kick out to four guys who are sitting at three-point line who can all hit open or contested threes.
What's interesting, I think, about the East, let's assume for a second Golden State makes the NBA Finals.
Sure, we can probably assume that.
I think Milwaukee and Toronto are the best teams in the East, kind of like how it finished in the standings. But I think the Sixers have the best chance to beat the Warriors.
They do.
Do you know why?
It's all about Tobias Harris, though.
But do you know why I say it? Because, like, I don't think I would pick the Sixers to beat Milwaukee in a series right now, or even the Raptors. Mm. But they are the most talented team in the East. So to me, if they make the NBA Finals, it probably means they found a way to like be clicking on all cylinders.
Right.
And when they're clicking on all cylinders with the talent they have, that's the only team in the East to me that would have like a realistic chance to beat Golden State. So even though I wouldn't say they're the best team in the East, I think they have the best chance to win the championship out of the East. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're probably right.
I mean, the fourth best player is Tobias Harris.
They do really have, but my whole thought on Tobias Harris and why I think he's like maybe the difference maker, right, is because they just don't have a guy other than Embiid and Jimmy Butler and that can score 20 plus. JJ Redick's close. Like, he's a guy, if he gets on fire, he'll just be hitting threes all day. And Ben Simmons is not a scorer. So if Tobias Harris, and the reason that they go trade for Tobias Harris is because they need another guy who's a natural shooter who can shoot the ball but also create for himself. Tobias Harris, if he can average 17 points a game, they will win the NBA championship.
Even if he did that, I don't think I would pick them to be Golden State. I don't think.
He'd be the X factor, though.
They have Boogie Cousins, too.
They do, who's healthy and playing really good basketball and who has also developed a really strong three-point game.
Yeah, I don't think no matter what anybody else was doing,
when KD
that
leaves,
I could ever pick Golden State to lose.
When
this year.
KD leaves, are they going to invest in Boogie?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No. I'd be surprised. I think he's going to the Clippers.
Really?
Yeah. With Kawhi Leonard. I think this is setting up for next year to be a situation where we've been living in a era of the NBA where one, maybe two teams can win the championship. Next year, like, it's possible that you could have seven or eight teams that would realistically be in it, depending on player movement. If Durant goes to the Knicks could win it. If AD goes to the Lakers could win it. The Warriors could still win it with that. If Kawhi Leonard goes to the Clippers, and maybe they had a Boogie Cousins, someone else like that, the Clippers could win it. The Thunder could win it because the Warriors are just the Warriors not being a super team anymore, I think opens up the entire league to where you no longer can make the jokes about, hey, we already know what's going to happen.
There's a really good chance
the Bucks could win it. If that happens.
There's been rumblings that Sixers. Zion won't play for the Knicks. I don't think that's true. I think Zion's going to play whoever he gets.
I don't think it's going to matter because I think the Cavaliers are going to win the lottery.
I don't think so.
Because that's just how things happen.
Yeah, but even so.
They're the Oilers of the NBA.
The Knicks, if they have RJ Barrett and or Zion and or, I mean, who else is like right up there? There's another.
Cam Reddish.
Yeah.
I only know the Duke guys. The Duke guys. Really.
Either way.
Ja Morant.
That's right. Yeah. Ja Morant. Oh, yeah. Man. But if the Knicks end up with Zion, Durant, and KD with Mitchell. With their big dude Mitchell.
See, this is what the Knicks do though.
The Knicks
put these ideas in everybody's head going into an offseason. Hey, we're gonna have Durant, we're gonna have Kyrie Irving, we're gonna have Zion Williamson. You know what they're probably gonna have at the end of the day? They're probably gonna have Cam Reddish, Kemba Walker, and Jimmy Butler. That's gonna be their team.
Okay.
Okay, fine. A lot better than what they have right now. It's not even on the same planet as Kyrie, Zion, and Durant.
Kemba's right up there with Kyrie for me. 803-0551, 888-552-550. We'll try to get Pat Millicaro when we come back. If not, we've got a little bit of a mock draft coming your way here live on Sports Talk Saturday. So stay tuned for that. And you can get your thoughts in on the picks as they come through. 803-0551, 888-552-550. Sports Talk Saturday rolls along here on WGR.
There's nothing better than being in contention on the weekend at the Masters driving up Magnolia Lane. I've got a great pairing today with Matt Kuchar. Obviously, we're not going to have any side action today because
I'd probably see like 0.06% if I did win. But we're going to have a great day. I love his caddy, Woody. And wearing all black, being aggressive, hitting bombs.
Hitting bombs. Phil Mickelson there from his Twitter. He's the man. He's the best. Honestly, for everything wrong with Tom Brady joining Twitter, everything right about Twitter is Phil Mickelson being on Twitter.
Did you see the AFC East quarterbacks golfing yesterday?
I did. It's pretty cool.
You think they invited Tom Brady?
No.
No.
I think the joke would have been Brady not being there, so I don't even think they invite Tom Brady.
We are going to bring your way right now a little live mock draft action, and right. We probably should. I want to get one pick in. Let's get the first overall pick before we go to break here. Right. Give us the music.
First off, this is why I make opens about you.
Yep. What are your sources hearing at one? What do you think? Who are you hearing? Who are you hearing at one?
It's Kyler.
Kyler Murray?
Yeah.
I hear there's rumors on the internets that we're going to have a draft. We're not going to have a draft, period.
All right, the Arizona Cardinals are on the clock. Firstpick.com. And they select Kyler Murray, quarterback from Arizona. And now, who's on the clock? The 49ers are on the clock.
49ers are on the clock. Let's get this pick in.
You want to do another pick?
Yeah.
Let's go up to the Bills quickly. Nick Bosa, 2.
Yeah.
The Jets are at 3. They select Cleveland Farrell.
Cleveland Farrell.
Cleveland Farrell. Okay. So clearly I'm not read up on the draft.
That's
right
now. Okay. No, you
know what? Farrell.
We've got the number
actually,
one
pick
down.
I'm going to skip 5 picks and we'll go to it.
Just the Bills kick real quick. And then we are one live.
So the Bills are on the clock. So before the Bills, we got Quinnen Williams going 4 to the Raiders. Juwan Taylor off the tackle going to the Buccaneers at 5. Devin White to the Giants. No quarterback for them. Jonah Williams going 7 to the Jaguars. The Redskins trade up to draft Dwayne Haskins at 8.
Does this
and now
mean
the Bills are on the clock. We have lots of trade offers.
Okay, so
7 trade offers to move down.
But I didn't hear the name Josh Allen.
Is he still available? He went 3rd. Quickly, let me look. He's on the board.
Yeah, that's the pick right there. That's the pick at 9. That's why.
Wait, you got to hear the trade offers, though.
Okay.
No, not really.
Do we want to wait?
I don't have to.
Do we want to wait for the trade offers, or do you want to?
No,
you want to
I'm just taking
you
Josh
take,
Allen.
You take Josh Allen.
I'm running. I'm running to the podium.
Listen,
Atlanta is offering you their first, second, and third round pick to move down to 14.
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care either. I think you
Miami
take Josh Allen.
Miami is offering
just,
you
just to pair up the Allens.
I would trade up. For
Denver
Josh.
Is yeah, offering so you a 7th round pick to move down one spot.
Nope,
because they probably want Josh Allen.
This Atlanta offer. Okay, one more. No, indeed. They want you to move to 26, but they're going to give you the second pick of the second round and the 27th pick of the second round.
Nope. No. Okay. 803-0550, 1-888-552-550. More mock draft when you come back here on Sports Talk Saturday at WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.